Dunkin' Cold K cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Okay. God, I love saying that. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker. Just brew over ice and sip in seconds. Bold, smooth Dunkin'. Taste you know and love. Find Dunkin' Cold Coffee in the roasted coffee aisle. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT. Now ADT professionally installs Google Nest products so your home is safe and smart. Google Nest cams can tell the difference between a person, an animal, and a vehicle. Mm. Or with Nest Doorbell, even a package. I can't tell the difference between those things. That's incredible. And with Nest Aware as part of your monthly ADT service, you get 30 days of event video history. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are trademarks of Google LLC.
Hi, my name is Stephen Wright, and I feel anxious about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends, yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I am the aforementioned Conan O'Brien, famed in song and story, and I'm joined, as always, by Sonam Avsesian.
Hi.
You could work on that. And Matt Gourley.
What songs are you famous for being in?
Just songs about me. Oh, here he comes. He's the great Conan. Look at him go. He's the funniest guy in the whole wide world. You know, songs that are just sung in general in the popular American catalog.
You know...
Comes Conan, funniest guy. He's as funny as a pizza pie.
I was just going to say, my kids are obsessed with, there's this soccer player named Lucas Podolski. Do you know who he is, Eduardo? He played a while ago.
German, right?
Yes. And there's this German song where they sing it for him. Like, Lou, Lucas Podolski. My boys are obsessed with that
song. How are they hearing it?
Yeah.
What station are they listening to?
They're not. It's not on a station.
Well, how do they know the song?
It's like a fan-made song. Tack played it for them, and now they're obsessed with it. They just come up, and they're like, Lou, and so we have to play it for them all day.
It's funny. I've been playing my daughter the original Swedish Pippi Longstocking theme, and she's obsessed with that.
Are you seriously playing it for her?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, we found, we used to go stay at my grandfather's house down in Missquamacut, Rhode Island, and we went up in the attic once. It had one of those, like, you know, ladders that you pull down, and it was this attic that, you know, stuff had been up there since the 30s and 40s. It was very musty, and we found these old comedy records, and so we would listen to these old records. I remember one of them was, yay, boo, it's lots of fun to do. If you like it, holler yay, and if you don't, you holler boo.
And that's a comedy record.
Comedy record.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it was just these kooky records that we would listen to. And this is, you know, like long before internet or anything like that. So what else are you going to do on a rainy day at the state beach in Missquamacut, Rhode Island, except listen to yay, boo, it's lots of fun to do. If you like a holly, yay, and if you don't, you holla boo. So fast forward to years and years later, I'm hosting the late night show. And this is on the air. I'm doing the show and whatever. We're a couple of years in. Everything's rolling along. We're just cranking out a show every night. And so you just start to get so loose. And at one point, I'm talking to the crowd and I made some joke that had like a maybe wordplay or something in it. And the crowd playfully was like, boo, boo. And I went, yay, boo. It's lots of fun to do. If you like it, holler yay. And if you don't, you holler boo. The whole crowd was like, what? The fuck was that? My producer, Jeff Ross, Mike Sweeney, everyone staring at me. And it just burbled out. And then I remembered this thing that I heard Johnny Carson said. He didn't say it to me, but he said it to somebody years ago. He said, when you do a show every night for an hour, everything in you eventually comes out.
Wow.
If you do it long enough.
Yeah.
And it's right. This record that I listened to in the rain on a rainy day, you know, in 1971, that's completely nonsensical, out of nowhere, the crowd, boo. Well, yay, boo, yay, boo. You know, and it's just crazy.
You're going to go really back and talk about your birth.
I know. Do you think that's scraping the bottom of the barrel, or that's only like halfway down and there's still way more?
Oh, man, there's so much. There's also records we listen to that now are completely just horrible in retrospect and politically incorrect. There's one called Slapper Down Again, Paw.
Okay.
Which was, horrible. I mean, we didn't know anything. We didn't even know what it was all about, but it was a comedy record about...
I think we could figure it
out. You get the idea.
Yeah.
And it was...
1947.
And, you know, it was just, there are all these records in the attic, and we would listen to one, and you think just me even mentioning it might be triggering to people.
The Prodigy came out with an album in 1998, 97, and one of the songs was Smack My Bitch Up. And I went to Coachella one year, and we were singing it and dancing it and dancing
to it. But you just weren't thinking about it.
We weren't thinking about the lyric, but that's what they say throughout the whole song. And it's a great song, but that lyric is very problematic.
Right, right. I'll stick with Yay Boo.
I'll stick with Har Come a Pippi Longstrumpf.
Wait, how does it go?
Har Come a Pippi Longstrumpf, shula hop, shula hey, shula hop, song, song.
What does it mean, though?
Here comes Pippi Longstocking with a hope and a hey and a hope, Shana.
Oh, so it does devolve into babble.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I suspected that.
Yeah.
I knew that part. And the song is just, and your song
it's
goes...
It's in German.
Yeah,
I don't know any of it.
But your children know it.
We listen to it constantly, but like I'm just like, I'm not going to learn this song. I don't know it. I just know Lulu Lucas Podolski. It sounds like such a Euro song. Did you find it?
Yeah, let's hear it.
It's on YouTube. It's just the Lulu... Lucas Podolski song.
And your 2 1.5-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, soon to be 2-year-old twins.
Yeah.
That's right.
Listen to this.
They're obsessed with this.
This is how they're learning about life. This is what this is what you're passing on to.
Yeah. And I don't know if. Yes. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Triggering. What? And then it stops.
Euro Club. What?
And it goes. Slowly, coldy, hallelujah.
Oh, it's Glory, Glory, Hallelujah.
No, yeah. I think it's Lodi Poldi Hallelujah.
No, it's to the tune of.
Yeah, I know.
It's to the tune of Glory, Glory.
They say Goldi Poldi.
Goldi Poldi Hallelujah, yeah. Oh.
Hey, Eduardo.
And then it gets very Euro.
Bring up Inger Nielsen's version of Har Come a Pippi Longstrumpf.
That was the meat of it. You didn't even get to the Lulu part, Matthew.
Trust me, we heard enough.
Wait,
and guess what? When I hear a lot of Germans chanting, I get nervous.
Yeah. Now, check this out. This is from the original Pippi Longstocking series, sung by Pippi herself, Inger Nielsen. Oh, this...
Here we go.
This isn't it. I'm sorry. It's the one that has a samba beat. Starts with some bongos. Inger Nielsen is the key there.
I think I'm calling child services on both of you.
I know. My kids listen to so many different... languages.
That's not it.
That's not it either. I mean, he knows his Pippi Longstocking.
I do.
I love that you're like, no, that's not it. Yeah. That's not it. No, that's the studio mix.
Yeah. No. This is the tune, but this is a remake.
Fuck you, Eduardo. What's going on? You were hired to be able to call up Pippi Longstocking songs.
Here, I got it.
It's so catchy.
Why is it a samba?
It should be.
Okay, now it's my turn. Find Yay Boo, Yay Boo.
Who was the artist?
Who's the artist? Let me see. Lil Nas.
Well, because there's a few versions.
Whoa.
Let's go back. What do you think?
Arthur Godfrey?
Arthur Godfrey.
Arthur Godfrey.
Yeah, he's the one that also, I think, did the other...
Yay Boo, Yay Boo, it's lots of fun to do. If you like it, holla yay. If you don't, you holla boo.
Yep.
I hear the public school burned down.
Yay!
What?
But they saved old teacher Brown.
Oh my God! Hold it.
Till next year.
They're upset that they're upset that the teacher didn't burn to death.
Where does this go?
What? Why does he sound like that?
Oh, I don't know. It was a different time.
Yes, didn't the school burn down?
He's doing a funny voice for a funny record. This is back when, if you wanted to be funny, you needed to use a funny voice.
How come SiriusXM isn't calling us for DJ sets?
I have no idea.
Be great. I should have a channel on SiriusXM that's all music you can't play anymore.
From the attic.
Yeah.
Music from my grandfather's attic. people get slapped around. Yeah, that was...
What happened to those records?
I don't know.
Boo.
Save the environment. Boo.
Have a cupcake. Yay!
Yeah. The wealthy get wealthier. Yay! Ruin the environment. Yay! Yeah, they had different priorities back then.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, listen, I think we've plumbed the depths of our childhoods, and I can't believe you're letting your kids hear those songs.
Come on.
Those are terrible songs.
Mine's solid.
Yeah. Mine's not that great.
Mine's yours solid. Is awful.
Yeah.
Bunch of angry Germans. Here we go.
It is a lot of angry
Germans. You'll all be They're whistling pippy.
We must move on to a man who's wiser than all of us, and he will show us the way. My guest today, very talented stand-up comedian and writer. To say that is ridiculous. He's not a very talented. He's brilliant. He's a genius, and he's been performing for over 40 years. He changed the game. He now has a fantastic new novel entitled Harold, available on May 16th. I'm not just excited. I'm thrilled he's here today. It's an honor. Stephen Wright, welcome. You have one of the most iconic voices in comedy. And I'm not even talking about your perspective, which is iconic, but just when you talking is such a delight to me. Oh. Every time I've had the chance to interview you, I think my heart beats maybe 200 beats a minute. And I think yours beats during leap years. Once. And I've always loved the contrast when I get to talk to Stephen Wright. I'm, you know, a Tasmanian devil, and you are a moon rock that's seen it all. It's really beautiful.
A moon rock that's seen it all.
Yeah. Yeah, you have.
I'm lucky I sound like this because obviously I'm not doing this. This is how I sound, and it's contributed to my whole career by complete accident.
Yeah,
I mean, this is just accident. But I'm not, even though I sound like this and I appear to be so laid back, I'm not as laid back as you might think I am. I'm not like you. I'm not like... But my mind is
I'm
going.
Glad you didn't finish that part. Because
of that sentence is I said, no.
On one of my first jobs, a writer named Steve Barker, who was from the Deep South, he looked at me one day and he used to drink like whiskey out of his desk. And he just took a long sip of whiskey and he went, "One day, O'Brien, you're going to blow. And you're going to leave a nasty stain." Because and I was like 22, but bouncing off the walls. But anyway, you said you're not as laid back as one might think you are.
My mind is going faster than my being to the outside world. Like I exercise every day. I'm an exercise bike or a real bike. I can get off the bike, get a phone call and hello. Oh, did you just wake up?
Right.
You know, just and you were just working 40 out. Minutes on the bike.
Right.
I can tell you, if we, me and you were made out of bamboo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think about this all the time. Okay. Let's continue that. If you and I were made of bamboo
poles, mm-hmm. like 20, each person was 20 to make a person.
Yep.
And they have to wrap them around to hold them together.
Yeah.
Yours are wrapped tighter
yes.
than mine. So mine are looser.
Yours rattle a bit when you shake them.
Yes.
And mine feels like one solid.
Yes.
I'm basically, it's wrapped so tightly, I'm like a steel pole.
You use your version to drill for oil.
Yes.
I've always seen you like
that. Can I tell you, Stephen, if I've heard this, if I've heard this once, I've heard it 1,000 times. I have so many people in my life have said, like, do you have a second when I'm in the street? If you and I were bamboo, you're wrapped so tightly they'd use you to drill for oil. And I go, I know. And Stephen, I finish their sentence. I go, I know, and you drill for oil. All the time.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to embarrass you really quickly, and then we can move on, because you're not going to like this. But I am hard-pressed to think of anybody who tickled my mind more when I was very young and just interested in, I mean, early 1980s, I'm 18, 19, and you explode on the scene. It was such a revelation to me that somebody could be so funny and so smart in such an original way. It was very inspiring to me and to, I mean, tens of thousands of people, not just from my generation, but generations going on. And I don't know if you're aware, I know you're a very humble guy, but I don't know if you're aware how much you changed things.
I hear about that I've influenced people. I've seen younger people that I can tell are influenced by me, but that's very nice of you to say that. Very nice. And I feel very lucky because I didn't, like, this is how I think, that's how I write, this is how I speak, and it just fell together, you know. Mm-hmm. There was no plan.
Right.
If I do it like this, then I'll be this different guy. It was like, go to the open mic night and think, okay, I'm going to go back in 2 weeks. Watch the open mic. I'm going to go back in 2 weeks. I wrote stuff. I had never written anything, so I wrote it during the 2 weeks, and I came back, and then I was saying it. Like, I mean, a lot, half of it didn't work, but the distinctness is completely like, by accident. It's like a fingerprint. Like your brain has a everyone's brain has a fingerprint. And I'm so lucky that the thoughts and the way I speak went together. And I'm also lucky that it clicked with the audience, because I wouldn't have another way to do it.
Right.
But thank you. Thank you very much for the compliment. Another thing is, when you're doing it, you're not thinking of a young kid watching it. You're just trying to make the audience laugh.
Yes.
You're trying to do a good TV appearance. You're not thinking of 14-year-old people. You're not thinking
of
that.
No, of course not. I mean, if you are, there'd be something wrong with you if you're, if every time you performed, you were thinking of a 14-year-old boy, Stephen, that would be a real problem. Are there any boys out there watching? Oh, hey, God. Take it easy, Stephen. Any little boys watching?
Oh, I'm going to be arrested, and I didn't even say it.
No, you kind of did say it. And that hat you're wearing is real skeevy. The hat goes with the whole thing.
Does it say that?
Here's the thing I want to zoom in on. What I want to zoom in on that's important to me is that, yes, your brain is different and you have this way of seeing things and you come along at this certain time. The hard part is when you get up and you're in the clubs, there is a very powerful, powerful, powerful force that makes people want to conform, because there's a way to be that's a little safer if you're in front of an audience. You clearly, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, are brave, because this is the way you were going to do it. And I'm sure there were audiences that didn't know what the hell is going on initially, but you kept going.
Well, I didn't think of it to not do it. I didn't even think, well, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It just came out like it happened. It's just so. But I made up rules. I had these four rules that I wouldn't do. That was on purpose, to not to stay like a little separated.
What were the? Can you tell us the rules?
No.
Do you want to tell you my rules?
Yes.
I have ten of them.
You have 10 of them.
Yeah. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. And maybe you should think about my 10 rules.
Your rules are much more known than mine.
I love if your rules are just about comedy, but you're a sociopath about everything else.
It's hilarious.
What the fuck are you doing?
I was going to say, when you said thou shalt not kill, I don't have that. I know.
You come in, your hands are all dirty. There's a shovel in the back of your car. Very strict rules about non-topical comedy. Very strict. Hey, what happened to that lady? Don't ask.
Oh, my God.
You know what was interesting is that you're doing this.
Can I tell you my rules?
Yeah, but keep it quick, because I want to get back to me talking. Okay? This isn't about you. It's not about you.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
There's a clock running, Stephen.
This isn't about you.
No, what the fuck?
This isn't about you.
Oh, I have to talk to Stephen, right, and find out what he thinks and his story.
This is my chance to shine.
I apologize for speaking. I wouldn't swear for two reasons, because I was... How I was raised was, you know, you wouldn't say that in front of people.
Right.
You wouldn't say that. The other thing is, I noticed that if you swore, the joke would get a bigger laugh than it really would without it.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, then the horse fell down. Oh, then the fucking horse fell down. That second one gets big. I didn't say this. I just learned. So mm-hmm. I wanted it to be real on the get the laugh on just the thought of it. And I didn't want to do topical things. I didn't yeah. want to talk about with movie stars or something in the news or mm-hmm. something like that. Because I wanted the joke to not be attached to time.
Yes. Yeah.
So that I could do it for 20 years.
That yeah. I get. Yeah.
You know, and what was the other one? That's two of them. There's four of them.
I think that was three.
No, was it? Swearing.
Not swearing.
Attached timeless. To time.
Don't list things.
Politics. Yeah, TV shows. You know, pop culture.
Yes.
So, and I did that on purpose.
Yeah.
Not really so I could do the joke forever, which I did the joke forever, but because that was, I looked at things, everyone is kind of saying this, so I'm not going to say that.
Right.
So a lot of it helped me what I didn't say. And in the beginning, there was a lot that were like more like regular comedy. Like sure. 70% of it was the weird abstract. But then as I continued, even in the first 8 months, that fell away.
Yeah.
Then it was just remained was this.
But it's this combination of like the writing was and is beautiful. Like it's beautiful writing. And I'm thinking of your famous joke. Yeah, I want you to do it, but I went into a restaurant that said they serve breakfast anytime.
Mm. So I ordered French toast during the Renaissance.
I have this, always had this theory that a good joke actually has weight, like the way an element does. Like it has a really classic line. You can almost feel the weight of it in the palm of your hand.
It's fascinating the details of it all, you know, not connected to time. But that French toast joke, that was one of the only jokes I ever ever adjusted. Because usually when I think of something, then I think of the wording, bang, 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 and then that's it. It's never changed. But that joke, it wasn't the Renaissance. It was something else. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. It was another reference to time.
Right.
But it wasn't the Renaissance. And right. then I thought, well, I'll change it to the Renaissance. And then you connect the French, it connects more.
Yes.
So it just like, it's fascinating, the details.
I'm fascinated by how people do it. Do you sit with a legal pad, typewriter? What were you doing? I mean... And you know, you think I'm making a joke with typewriter. I actually do write stuff on a typewriter
because
I have some old typewriters and I just love the mechanism of it. And I love the kind of, I think a little harder when I'm working on a typewriter because it's being put on paper and it feels a little more formal.
It's more of a physical combination of thing rather than a computer.
Yeah.
There's an physical effort. In the first 6 months, I would get the newspaper out and look through it and see if something would click, like to write, find a joke. But then after like 6 or 8 months, my mind became, because it's all based on what you notice, right?
Yeah,
all the comedy is noticing.
Mm-hmm.
So my mind just became noticing. I didn't no longer look at the paper. It was just like... You go out and you just notice. And one of my favorite jokes I ever did was I was looking through the paper and I saw electrolysis, you know, an ad for electrolysis.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what a word. The sound of that word is interesting and what it means is interesting. So then my mind later came up with I lived in a building, they allowed pets, and I had a pony. I had a Shetland pony named Nikki. And he was involved in a bizarre electrolysis accident. All the hair was removed except for the tail. Now I rent him out to Hare Krishna family picnics. And that was because I saw that. Because I saw the ad.
Yeah. A lot of beaches out there. But only one beach is the beach.
Why did your voice change?
You heard me. Only one beach is the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Say it with me. Myrtle Beach.
Myrtle Beach.
You didn't. That's just a phrase. Sorry. You don't have to say it with me.
Okay.
Myrtle Beach is 60 miles where you belong. Can you believe that? Everyone always talks about Myrtle Beach being the best beach. So much so that people refer to it as the beach.
Yeah.
The beach is where your best self comes out. Myrtle Beach has 60 miles of uninterrupted coastline and endless things to do on your trip. You love to eat, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, I know the answer to that one. There are over 2,000 restaurants serving up fresh seafood, southern classics, and low country cuisine. Love music? Who doesn't? Live music is the soundtrack to the beach, or as I call it, the beach. There's live music every night of the week, all year round. Plan your trip to the beach at visitmyrtlebeach.com. Sona, what would you do with $100 billion? Seriously.
Oh, I would buy a country.
Okay. I would buy just a ton of yachts and private jets, and I would duct tape them all together and then just have it go in a circle in the Pacific Ocean.
What?
Yeah. I don't know, just to be a total jerk. Anyway, there is a correct answer.
Oh.
And it's build incredible cities in fantastical locations while competing with your friends to be the biggest tycoon in the world. What do you think of that answer?
That's better than mine.
Yep, and mine, which you can do with Monopoly Go, the hit mobile game that's so much fun, it's been downloaded over 150 million times. It's the fun of classic Monopoly on the go, anytime, anywhere, endless new surprises like tons of boards and crazy mini games. You can team up with your chums on community chess and tournaments to get big money, or you can go after their fortune changing rent on your properties or even pulling a bank heist on them. So much fun. It's incredible. So start building up your billions today. Go download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store and Google Play. Hey, Sona, do you settle for ordinary in your own home?
No.
Well, you kind of do. Anyway, with Floor and Decor, you don't have to put up with rooms that just look meh. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Meh is kind of a phrase these days. Floor and Decor doesn't just have a couple of aisles of options. It's an entire store with the largest selection of tile, wood, and stone in stock and available in job lot quantities. Mm. That's what I need, job lot quantities. And if you're a pro like me, Floor and Decor also has a job site delivery, along with all the brands pros trust for installation. There's also design experts in the store to help you find the right look at the right price. And guess what? It's free.
That's my favorite price.
Free is the best price, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Unless it's for food. And then I'm like, oh, I'm about to pay a little.
No, I like free food, too.
Well, it can be scary. Anyway, we got off track. You can resist the ordinary and find more ways to wow with Floor and Decor.
You know, I drew a lot. Before growing elementary school, high school, drawing and painting, before I ever wrote anything. And when you draw something, you notice, realistically. I changed to abstract in my 20s. But before that, it was real. Like, so you really notice stuff. Like, if you're gonna draw this glass and this bottle, the shape of the glass and the shape of the bottle, but the shape in between it is also a shape.
Yeah.
And that helps you get it accurate, you know, to make it look real. And I think that exercised my noticing abilities, like, because it's just like all the comedy is from noticing. You know, in the tower in the airport, you know, the tower they have with the radar.
Yeah.
So the radar sweeps like this, and then there's little dots of the planes. So my subconscious was scanning. I'm not walking down the street. I need another joke. I need a new joke. Right. I'm just walking down the street, but the scan is going like this.
And it's because his mind is in that state. He's looking and looking and looking, and it fascinates me.
Especially when you get doing it enough where you're making a living, even if you're just barely paying the rent, you're making a living from the comedy. You know, $100 a week, that's $300, $400 pays the rent, even less than that. So you have time. You don't have to go somewhere and do this, this, this. So you're wandering around, you know, like a four-year-old. You're just wandering. To me, the world is made up of like, it's a giant mosaic painting. It's mm-hmm. little tiny fragments that make up everything. I've noticed things where I combine, oh, this could be connected. This thing that has nothing to do with this does have a common denominator, maybe in the word or something. And then you combine. I'm not thinking when I make it yeah. up. I'm not going like I'm not doing what I just said to you.
No, no, no.
I
it's
just
happening. Say, oh, it's happening. Happening.
It's like, oh, that could mean that. And it's a bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, it's really cracks me up that my dad's a scientist, and he said wow. once. That he's not a good one. he's a shitty scientist. We don't even think he has a degree. He just walks around with a microscope that he found.
A microscope
yeah.
that he found?
Yeah, and he tied it, he wore it around his neck like Mr. T with a medallion. And he said, I'm a scientist. And then he'd just hang out at the train station all day.
The train station?
Yeah, eat grilled cheese sandwiches. We were like, nah, he's a scientist. But no, but he said, like, the job of your brain, the thing that's happened in evolution that's supposed to keep us alive is our brain making connections that make sense. Like, huh, I've got a fire here and I've got meat here. When I cook the meat, it actually tastes a little better. I'm going to start doing that. And I think there's something with the comedians I really admire, like you, there's almost something, a miswiring that wouldn't work in evolution, but we're connecting things that shouldn't be connected. And my dad once said to me, and you know, I've said it before, but he looked at me once and he said, it's interesting, because he's very honest and he's also very smart. And he said, you're making your living off of something that probably should be treated. And I realize he's not wrong.
That's hilarious.
It's taking, you yes. know, you can have breakfast anytime or, you know, the electrolysis joke. You're taking things and putting them together and they live on completely different synapses that aren't supposed to cross. They're not supposed to be touching each other.
Yes.
But something's either wrong or right in a beautiful way. And that's what happens.
Somehow you see a connection.
You know, I remember it was talked about a lot at the time, but you went on Johnny Carson in 1982. I believe it was your first spot. Very few comics get to go on. It's almost impossible. And if you do get on, it's a big deal. And you went on, if I'm remembering it correctly, Johnny was so impressed, you were so different and so smart that they invited you back very quickly. Is that true?
Yes, I went on Friday and then the next Thursday.
Which hadn't, I mean, that didn't happen.
It was insane. When they called me on Wednesday, Jim McCauley, he started talking about the show, and I thought he was referring to the one that happened. I didn't understand what he meant. He said, no, we want you to go on tomorrow.
Did you have another set?
I had another set, but I had like a total of 15 minutes of stuff that could go on there. And I remember saying to him, but if I go on there tomorrow, that's 3 years, more than half the stuff is gone. And he simply said, well, you're going to have to write new stuff anyway. And he to go on twice in 1 week is so amazing.
It was unprecedented at the time and seismic. And that was a time when if you went on that show, you were famous overnight. I mean, people recognized you the next day because that was all anybody was doing at 11:30 at night was watching Johnny Carson.
Yeah, because it was three channels and cable was just starting. Right. It was like going through the Alice in Wonderland, going through the door there, you know, and Peter LaSalle, you know, this. You saw me in the Ding Ho Chinese restaurant in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. He was the producer of The Tonight Show and then 2 weeks later, I was on there. We were talking outside in the driveway. Do you remember when we were in the driveway?
Yeah, it was about 15 minutes ago. I'm still capable of remembering things, but yes.
There wasn't a judgment on you. It was just simply, I'm very accurate. I don't even know what I was saying.
We were talking about, you were at the Ding Ho.
Flukes. Mm-hmm. Different accidents, mm-hmm.
little things that happen to change the course of your life contribute.
You know, someone wrote an article about that Chinese restaurant, went in the LA Times. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Then he saw it. Then 8 months later, he was going in the summer to go to Massachusetts and New York because his kids were going to go to college. So they went on a college summer trip, and he remembered the article. So he calls up and, you know, just a lot of flukes.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate.
It's clear that impressionism and, or abstract, I'll use the word abstract, abstraction is really important to you. And there must have been a time in your life when you were a kid or something where you were, saw abstract art or you read abstract writing and it rang a giant bell in your head.
It wasn't the writing. It was Salvador Dali, combined surrealism. When I had a art class, 11th grade in Burlington, Mass, we went into Boston to one of the main museums, and that's where I first saw surrealism. I never even heard of surrealism. And two of the paintings I remember, there was a painting of a clothespin in the middle of the field, and it was the size of a silo. But it didn't look cartoonish. It didn't look ridiculous. It was like, oh my God. And then there was another painting of a road coming down like this, and then when it went down like that, it turned into a waterfall. And I mean, I was 16. I'm telling you these paintings. Yeah. I was jolted by the combining of these two realities. And a lot of the writing we were just talking about, the mosaic thing is like, oh, this, you know, this is not a clothespin. You know, that jolted me more than what I read influencing. But your head is like a soup. Everyone's head is a soup. Don't you think? It's the ingredients, you know, Kurt Vonnegut, surrealism, Monty Python, the comedians all over the Tonight Show, and you know, listening to albums, and it all goes into Woody Allen. To me, he's still the best. He's the top guy. His writing and all that goes into your head. I was a big Bruins fan during the Bobby Orr days.
You had to be, by the way, because I was growing up. I was in grade school then. I was in second, third grade, and all anybody talked about back then was Bobby Orr. And Phil Esposito and you know, all and everybody, because you know, Bobby Orr was the biggest thing in the world, and in Boston we just couldn't believe that we had this phenomenal player who was changing the game.
Yeah, it was incredible. That time was incredible. And I would listen to the games in my bed, and I had a radio in the bed, and one night I was fooling with the dial and I stumbled on this show where a guy played two comedy albums every Sunday night. So I started tuning in. He played cut from one, cut for the other, and I'm laying in bed in the dark and I'm listening for like 2 years. I'm doing this, and it was, I didn't know it, but I was like going to school, comedy school, because I'd be thinking, oh, I like that guy. Oh, I don't like that. But anyway, it goes back to the soup. Don't you think all your head is like made up of all these different random and sometimes on purpose ingredients?
Yeah, I think that works. I don't, you know, I prefer a stew.
A stew?
Yeah, it's a little heartier. Mine is a I think yours is a very light broth. But
you're criticizing me during my analogy. Yeah, saying that your head, yours is better.
I want to win.
Come on.
It's a light. Listen, I'm not putting down a light broth.
broth.
No,
I never thought I heard you say that.
It's a consomme. No, your brain is a consomme, and you taste it, and you're like, this is great. I've been a little sick, and this is really helping. Now, I'm like, if you've been out in the woods felling trees, you don't want the Stephen Wright consomme. You're a between meal palate cleanser. Which, and then again, no put down.
No put down.
But I'm in a big crock pot.
Yes.
Like, and just huge chunks of really good sirloin and potato, and there's some Guinness in there that really thickens the broth.
You keep going 9 more minutes on that.
Yeah. Do we have time? Steve, why don't you go get a sandwich? Go get a sandwich.
I come back.
So there's carrots. There's peas. There's some yam. There's all kinds of thickeners in the broth, you know?
God, it's thick.
It's a really thick broth. You put the wooden spoon in there and it stands up on its own.
And what if you put a spoon in my
wood? Oh, if you put it in yours, it just immediately flips over and falls on the ground. And you have to put it in fast because yours evaporates quickly.
The longer he goes, the worse. Mine's nothing.
Yours diminished high, and mine keeps getting better.
As time goes on.
No, I mean, critics around the world want to taste mice
around the world.
And yours, they'd taste it if it was if it would stick around long enough. It's just a vapor before they can get to it. But no, I agree with you. I agree with
But I agree with you.
There's all this. As long as we've established that mine's the better food, richer, more life sustaining.
Yes. Making, you know, that's the beauty of, I mean, imagine, I feel very fortunate to have a career from making things up. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like that?
Oh, I feel that way 24 hours a day. I mean, I earlier in my life when I would think all of these strange things, and I love to cartoon and draw.
Oh, I didn't know
I was
know
not
that.
I couldn't draw. That's fine. Answer your phone.
No, I'm
clearly I'm a priority.
You would think I was shutting it off, but I want to see what this. No, I shut it off.
I love it if you took the call and it was a spam call.
It's a spam call. Well, when, I'm arguing with the guy.
What's involved? Well, I don't know.
I don't need blind.
Hold on. Well, wait a minute. Tell me more. And I'm going on and on about the stew still. There's radishes.
No, you're in your, you're sleeping.
No, but what I'm saying is I'm constantly, anyone who's in this business and isn't realize that it is a complete crazy privilege to get any money or rent or mortgage payment in this world. I think, I mean, Sona, you have a really good perspective on it because you came at this from this crazy angle and now it's just, well, I got to go in and talk to Stephen Wright.
I know.
And it's, I can't believe it. Like I
would pay to do this. I can't believe
well,
I get
I'm glad you said that.
Oh, no.
No, you should pay.
Okay, I forget I said it.
Yeah, no.
No.
$1,000
no,
a day.
You're right. No. But, oh, come on.
You know, I'm curious. Like, I know I'm very grateful. I also think there's something about maybe I'd feel differently if I had grown up in Los Angeles or grown up around this. But it's very hard for me to explain to people how Massachusetts, and especially the era that we grew up in, 60s, 70s, coming of age in that time, there was show business was further removed, not just Massachusetts, but Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, that area. The last thing in the world you ever thought could happen was that you could be in show business. I saw no evidence that show business existed. I didn't see famous people. I didn't know anybody who was related. You know, my dad's a fake scientist at the bus station. Like, you never thought that you would get any chance. And I think it's a different world now. People think about things differently. And Boston looks so different now. I mean, look at movies from the 60s and 70s that depict Boston. Look at The Verdict, Friends of Eddie Coyle. Look at these movies that show Boston in the 70s. It's so gray and it's so unappealing in so many ways and kind of depressed. And
so real.
And so real and kind of gritty. Yeah,
no
slickness at all. And then I remembered leaving, coming to LA, getting involved in other stuff in my career, and then coming back to Boston in the late 80s. And suddenly there's like pan quotidiens everywhere. And people were saying, would you like a crepe? And I was like, this is not the Boston I grew up in. You can go back and look at those movies. And I go like, that's the Boston
I
remember.
That's it. That's
cars
it.
That are rusted out.
Yeah.
Everyone's wearing a gray jacket. Policemen are all really heavy. Their belts are like around their nipples and they're directing traffic, but I don't think they've ever shot a gun in their life. Nobody's, you know, people aren't that nice. It's cold. The snow all turns sooty right away.
Right away.
Somehow that all changed.
It's like a whole different vibe.
Yeah.
And I think that realness that you just described makes us appreciate, what do you mean you're going to go do this show and that's how you're going to pay the rent? What do you mean? Because all you see is people doing, that's real, like, you know, jobs. That's why I appreciate it all the time. It's like it's playing. Don't you think this is playing?
Oh, it's totally playing.
It's like being 5 or 10 and you're finger painting, but with words.
Yeah.
Oh, imagine this. You know, you're in the cafeteria saying to your friend, oh.
Right.
And then this becomes your career.
Now, what do you prefer? Obviously, you're very comfortable on a stage. You're great on a stage. Do you like being up in front of people or do you prefer the part where you're crafting it?
It's two different things: writing the material and then performing the material. The performance is very intense to me, mm-hmm. even still now. I mean, I'm not nervous, but it's like walking a tightrope. The way I see, it's like you were running across a lake of thin ice, and you're trying to get to the other side without falling through right. during the length of the show.
Right,
that's very intense. I would say that the writing is more of a, it's enjoyable. It has no intensity. You're just minding your own business, and then something happens.
Yeah.
How do you feel about being in front of the audience? I can't imagine on television night after night after night. How?
It was so funny because there's one of the great comedy writers of all time, George Meyer, worked at The Simpsons when I was there. And he's, you know, legendary, brilliant guy. And he had worked on the early Letterman show. And I was being considered as possibly being one of the people who might replace Letterman. And my name is starting to show up in the trades. And, you know, I'm working at The Simpsons. And my friends are like, this is crazy. This is insane. And when I know, I don't think it's going to happen, but it's crazy. And they're like, man, but you're a funny guy. This could be a funny show. I think you could do it. And they're all saying, no, I think you could do it. I remember George Meyer. I went out in the parking lot and George Meyer was walking with me. He's like, oh, man. I wouldn't do it if I were you. And I said, really? And this didn't come from anything, but he was just being honest. And he went, I worked on one of those shows every day. Feed the dragon every day. And he was like, don't do it. It'll ruin your life.
Wow.
And you know what?
Wow.
He wasn't wrong, but I'm also, it was the best thing I ever did. And what I found was this magical thing. I realized very early on doing an hour a day, I remember the worst thing about this job is that you have to do it every day for an hour. The best thing about this job is that you get to do it every day for an hour, because when you crank up the volume like that, over time, think, what the hell? What the fuck? Let's give it a shot. Masturbating bear? Let's give it a shot. You know, a dog puppet that insults people and says, you suck. I want to poop on you. Let's try it.
I don't know how you did it.
Well,
I don't know how you did it that over and over and over and over.
As I said to somebody once, they said, Jesus, you know, 4,300 something shows. How did you do it? And I said, the trick is, some of them aren't very good. It's just kind of true. Like, yeah. You look at some and you go, oh, I see how he did it. That wasn't so good, but we always tried. But enough about me, a little about you, and then more about me.
Okay.
So usually when I hear I'm going to talk to somebody and they've written a book, I get this feeling of apprehension, which is, oh, man, I got to read the book. They booked you, and I'm very excited. And then I hear Stephen wrote a novel. I'm immediately very intrigued. So I get sent this copy of Harold, which is this novel you wrote, and it's beautiful. It's really funny and touching. It's beautifully written. I think only you could write this. And I love it. I really do. And it was such a nice thing for me to read the book and then know I get to go and drive in and talk to tell Stephen, you got here a little early and I heard you were hanging out outside like a creep. But I was so excited. I had the book and I wanted to go down and tell you, I need to tell you how much I like your book.
I really appreciate
it. And it's funny because you mentioned Vonnegut and I'm like, I can feel like there's different strains. Like you say, there's a soup, but I can see like Joseph Heller and Vonnegut. But it's very sweet and also at times sad. And there's such funny stuff in here. And it's all from the mind of an 8-year-old, 7 or 8?
7.
Yeah. I didn't read it that thoroughly. I just skimmed to get it.
I just skimmed
to get his age. Skimmed. I'm very good at it. I'm pretty, you know, that's the one thing I will read is the age. No, but I was, I think 8 would have been the better choice, but that's my stew brain. Versus your consomme brain.
No, my broth brain.
But you know, first of all, one of the first things that struck me because I'm so obsessed with myself is I read this thing at the front
by the editor of the book from Simon & Schuster, who's clearly a big deal editor, and he's talking about how he stumbled upon you doing a set on my show, an interview on my show.
Oh, yes.
And he talks about how, this is why it all comes together. He talks about how he's always been a fan of yours. And then he said, he says here at the top of the book, starting to think about, you know, what could I do with Stephen Wright? And then he said, I had only started my job, I guess it's Simon & Schuster, and I was spending a lot of time searching the internet, trying to come up with book ideas. I can't remember what weird YouTube algorithm led me to it, but I came across a clip of Stephen Wright on Conan O'Brien's Late Night Show back in 2013, when he talked about writing a novel on Twitter, posting one sentence at a time. How long is the novel by now? Conan asked. 1,500 pages, Wright said. 1,500 pages, Conan said. And then you say, if there's one word on each page. And then I guess he thought, I got to check this out. So he went on Twitter and you really were doing that. And then he starts talking to you and you guys form a friendship and you do this book. So I was just thrilled that...
That's amazing, the connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's tremendous.
Yeah. You would also think there might be a little financial sharing in here. But we'll talk about that later. You'll hear.
No, I love that. I love that
But I love the serendipity of you do this joke. This guy sees that. Then you start talking. Then this book comes along. And this book is really special because it's a boy and he's growing up in, you say, the mid-60s. He's in a classroom. And he's daydreaming and thinking, you know, throughout the class. And his mind is taking him all around the universe. He talks about hanging out with his grandfather. And in there are great, I don't want to call them jokes, but really good, profound observations. And they're all very much the way a kid would think. And you have this idea about what if people were like trees and that they just kept getting taller as they got older. And I'd be walking down the street as a seven-year-old boy, and I'd see an 80-year-old woman, and she's 45 feet tall. and you have this conversation with her, and I'm just tickled. And then there's so many sweet things that happen in it. And it's very, it's almost also has some sort of a James Joyce quality, because it's all happening very constrained period of time. But also the time is infinite, because if you're daydreaming, a billion things can happen in 45 minutes.
Yeah, he's in the class and he's thinking, he's daydreaming, he's thinking about dreams he's had, he's thinking about experiences that he really, he's thinking of memories, and it all is in one day. And in the class, I it's great that you like it so much.
I love it. How much of it is you, or do you not want to say?
A lot of it. I think you can't write anything be completely made up. You know, the thing is, when I was writing it on Twitter, I wrote like half a page on there. Then I stopped and then I didn't write it for like a year. And then I thought that thing, I should keep writing it and just keep going. But I didn't put it on Twitter. So I just kept going. And, you know, the jokes I do are like creatively, it's like going through a narrow window, a couple sentences, two, three sentences, and hopefully the audience laughs, you know, okay, and I'm not complaining, I'm just describing it. But I had a lot of things in my mind that wouldn't go through that window. It'd just be couple liner joke. So I essentially used Harold's head. It's like I put a funnel on his head. And I poured into that funnel everything I think about being alive. Yeah. You know, religion and war and authority and the universe and... Is there a God? And, you know, that's all the way
through. That's repeated all the way through the book. Yeah. Is God willing if there's a God? You know, I hope God, if there's a God. So you're constantly questioning that throughout.
When I first started writing it, I realized there was no story. And then I thought, I can't keep this. There's no story. And then I thought, I don't know how. So I stopped for a year. I thought, I don't know how to write a story. I don't know how. Yeah. And then I thought, a year later, I thought, so what? I want to just write it anyway.
Right.
So it's not like this happened, then he did, and then because of that. Yeah. So I just accepted that I didn't know how to write a story. So I just, went.
The other thing I love is Harold's voice, very much like your voice, but imagine you as a kid. But there's a great thing where his teacher is prominent because she's running the class the whole time. Harold is thinking all these incredible things and having these journeys in his mind. And every now and at one point she... he remembers a time that she came up and looked at what he was drawing, what Harold was drawing, and said, "That's really beautifully done. You did a really good job here, Harold." And he said, "How dare you judge me?" Because even flattery is a judgment.
It's a judgment.
It's a judgment. And it's just packed with those things. So I hope you write more. But if all you wrote was this, that is plenty, because it is fantastic. It's really good.
Thank you so much.
And you're such a great, inspirational, and fascinating person to talk to and laugh with that I hope you come back.
I would love to. You're one of those people
who needs to come back.
I would love it.
And I'll have more. We can have more competing analogies.
More,
you know?
Soup analogies. Bro.
Or we can maybe change it to.
No, I would,
you know,
love
our
it,
brains are like, you know, crackers, and yours is a very a dry Dutch cracker that's got a high seed count. It's very good for your bowels. And I'm like this rich, savory, buttery cracker.
I noticed that all yours are always
better. Oh, they're good.
better than mine.
I
see a pattern.
Yeah, there's a pattern here. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think you are one of the fastest, incredible comedy minds ever. Mm. That's what I would say to people. What is it like going on there? I said, hey, you know what? I say something, I think, hope it's funny. But if it's not, it doesn't matter, because you are like a laser.
It's
incredible.
Well,
really
coming
incredible.
From you, that's huge. So I get
yes,
to,
I mean that. It's
I
unbelievable.
I get to feel good about myself for an hour. No, coming, there's no higher... no higher praise I could get than a compliment from you. So seriously, we all owe you. I mean, we all, but you changed everything for so many of us. Lucky that you came along. We really are. And that was, you say it's a quirk, it's an accident, but you also, and I do think I give it up for quirks and accidents, but there's also integrity and hard work and being a good person. And those things aren't quirks. So that makes it all wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's never speak again.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much, Stephen Wright.
Thanks for having me.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. Sounds pretty good, huh? Doesn't it, Sona?
I like that.
Yeah, you like it. This means you can earn on what you want, like trying out the new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. You're always asking about a foam roller.
Yeah, I love to work out.
And use a foam roller.
And
that's the beauty.
Foam it up.
That's foam it up. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. I don't know where they come up with these things. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash. Can't believe we've been doing this podcast for 5 years. Lots changed. But you know what? There's also things that haven't changed. Mm. Great taste of Miller Lite. Yeah. Hasn't changed. It was the original light beer. And to this day, for my money, it's still the best one.
It's good.
I'll fight anyone that disagrees.
Will you?
Well, not with my... I'll have someone fight for me. Miller Lite has more of the taste you want, less of the stuff you don't.
Yeah.
I like great taste, clean finish, simple ingredients.
Yeah.
You know, some of these beers, they put caramel in there.
Ugh.
Corn cobs.
Oh.
Chicory. I don't want that. I like the simple taste of Miller Lite. Classic. Undebatable quality. Great taste. Only 96 calories.
That's good.
It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need, holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes, hello, like beer.
Yeah, not like water that's just kind of beery.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like that. That's a bad name for a beer, too. Water that's mostly beery. The original light beer since 1975. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. I came up with that.
Oh.
I should get paid. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Conan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. I just had a fascinating experience. I was on a work trip, and I was in a country I'd never been to before, Thailand. Mm. I was in Bangkok and doing some work there. More on that later. But it was fascinating. And
I sent you a little message, Mr. Gourley.
Yeah.
I know you're a Bond fan. Mm-hmm. And at one point I'm at the Floating Market in Bangkok, where you can get on a boat and go from market to market and buy your wares, your souvenirs, and then go on to the next market. It's this really famous venue. I had forgotten this, but someone, it might have been Aaron Blair, was with me because we always travel together as lovers. And
that's true.
Yeah. So I don't have to pay you also.
That's also
It's just a relationship. Yes. So I'll have relationships with people just so I don't have to pay them.
No, but no money exchange hands, but a lot of other stuff exchange.
Okay, all right.
You do pay him.
Yes, to be my lover.
No
one's going to voluntarily lay with this old bag of bones. So anyway, this took a, I don't know.
Why did you do that?
No, why did I do it? He's the one that said yes. Wait a minute. Now we're really, so here's the point.
Yeah.
Which is, Blay mentioned, oh, this would make Gourley jealous. And before he even said anything else, I was elated because I didn't know what Blay was talking about, but I was immediately happy that there was a way that you could be unhappy. And he said, this is where they shot the Bond, a famous sequence in the James Bond film, Man with the Golden Gun. And then I remembered, oh, right, Roger Moore is driving through the market and he's being chased. And I immediately remembered that. So I made a video. It must have been like 3 or 4 in the morning here in Los Angeles. It was midday Bangkok, and I sent it to you. Mm. And I hope you took that video in the spirit in which it was meant.
Well, first, let me clear something up. I'm not really a James Bond fan.
Oh.
Oh.
James Bond will return.
Oh, my God. You're wearing a shirt that says James Bond will return.
And second of all...
Did you know we were talking about this today? Wait a minute. You didn't know we were talking about this today?
You have a lot of James Bond
Wait a
clothes.
Minute. You're just wearing a James Bond shirt underneath your sweatshirt, and you happen to be wearing that when we brought this up.
That's true.
That's sick. You're a sick person. You're a sick person.
Do you feel better or worse about doing this now?
I just feel like you need a... Pity? You shouldn't have a family.
I think
your family should be... I think social services should come by and take... both your child and your wife away, which they rarely do. They usually just take the child, but at this point, I think they should take both away.
Yeah.
All right, so that blows my mind that you, that's right, you didn't know what I was going to talk
about. I'm not even going to justify it. Never mind.
So I sent you a video.
Yeah.
And what? How did you feel when you got the video?
Well.
Do you want to listen to it?
Yeah, let's play it here. I have it.
Hey, Matt, Conan here. I am here at the Floating Market in Bangkok. This is where they shot that iconic scenes in Man with the Golden Gun. And I know that this is on your bucket list. I just wanted you to know I got here first.
Psych! Now, the biggest issue I take...
Psych!
Do you understand the meaning of the word psych? So were you or were you not there?
Oh, you mean like... It...
You blew it.
I blew it.
Oh.
So you mean psych should have meant I fooled you, I'm not really there.
Yeah, like you're at like not... Venice, California.
Well, guess what? No, it does still make sense because I don't think I was at the exact location. I think the exact location was about 100 yards away. No.
This is a very infamous scene in Bond history because Roger Moore is in a little boat chase and a little Thai boy comes up to sell him something and he face palms him and shoves him in the water.
What an asshole.
I know, yeah.
And this is Roger
Moore's... Roger Moore, who's typically the kind of friendly Bond.
Yeah. Right. He's the Bond that used hairspray.
And a lot of it, yeah.
A lot of it,
yeah.
So yes, that's, I remember that scene, him shoving a little boy into the water.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted you to know that I got there first.
You know what's worse? I've been to Thailand and I didn't even get to see that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, did you know that?
Yeah, I just was tired.
How tired do you have to be to not go to a Bond locale?
You know what? The only thing that beats me is heat. If it's hot out and like humid, I don't want to go do it.
It was record setting heat when I was there. And I could tell because the Thai people, I'd be walking down the street and the Thai people were walking up to me going, Jesus, it's hot. This is freaking hot.
And I said, like, so you're, I'm a native. Yes. I've lived here my entire life. Good God. And yeah.
Did you go to the Pee-Pee Islands?
No.
I know that sounds like a setup to a joke, but it's, that's.
Well, a setup for a joke you would do, but. Yeah.
How about Poopy Flats?
Nope. Didn't go there either.
Okay. That's where the beautiful like islands stick out of the water. And that's from the end of that movie where the villain's lair is.
I did not go down to the islands. No, did not go there. Shot almost exclusively in and around Bangkok, which is fascinating. It's a fascinating place. Loved it. Food was extraordinary. People are lovely. And we shot some stuff there that I think people are going to really like. Happy about that. But I mostly, I've been battling, I think I got back 2 days ago. I had no problem with the flight from LA, flew from LA to Hong Kong and then to Thailand. No jet lag, nothing. Just got right to work. Landed in the morning, got right to work. And we were there for about 9 days. Then came back Hong Kong to LA and my heart hasn't functioned properly. I have just been, my body's completely screwed up, and my mind doesn't work. And I think I'm capable of any crime right now.
I think that's because when you get to Thailand, you're like, oh, it's time to shoot. And then it's like your adrenaline. Because
you've seen me in action.
I've seen you. It's not like you're going to be like, I need a nap first. You're like, let's get the camera. Let's go. But when you come back here, you don't shoot anything.
There's just a wife and a son.
Oh.
And you're like, what's this all about?
Who should have their family taken away from them?
They've called. They've called social services. They're constantly calling social services.
I don't think it has anything to do with the time change or the flight. I think it has to do with the camera pointed at your face.
Yeah. It is true. I was doing all this stuff that I can only do when a camera's pointed at me.
Yeah.
I was doing all these stunts and things that, and people were saying, hey, you're kind of old. You shouldn't be like, I'm fine. Roll that camera. We just shot him in the chest and he seems fine.
Yeah.
Shoot me again so we get it from the other angle.
Oh my God.
Set me up to use the word psych.
Yeah. Teach me how to use that word.
I will say we did, and we put a picture out on social media of you kickboxing. Mm-hmm. And
Muay Thai.
Muay Thai kickboxing. And I should mention that although it was covered, it was completely outside.
Yes.
And every day we would look at the temperature and it would say 94, feels like 108.
Yeah.
And
I'm
not exaggerating.
God.
That's what it said. And so
with the humidity,
day,
and that's wet.
Because of the humidity, it's 108.
And it's a
and
wet.
We did a shoot and I was just trying to get out of the way and was out of breath and sweating through my clothes. You were literally jumping and kicking.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Yeah, and I I'm fueled by a terrible hole in the middle of my soul that just powers me on.
I know.
No, I did. That was really fun. We did all this stuff that I really enjoyed, but a highlight was getting to a bond site before you. And now I'm determined to go and visit all the bond sites I can.
It's a race.
No.
You got a lot to catch up on. I've been to a lot of them.
First of all, I'm going to hire a cinematographer to study those scenes and prove to you that you weren't in the exact right place.
Oh.
I'm going to spend a great deal of money. And then I am going to go to all the exact correct places and I'll get the permission of the Roger Moore estate to examine all the documents necessary.
Remember he died on my birthday?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember that.
I remember.
You leave my mind the minute I leave the studio.
I don't doubt that.
Remember he died on my
birthday. Well, I only say that not because I expect you to remember that, but because when I said that before, you hit me so hard. You really hit me over the head with that fact.
Mm. Yeah.
So I thought maybe it did make an impression.
No.
Okay, great.
No.
I think the way for him to be nice to you is if you just came with a handheld camera.
Oh, Matt. Yeah. I think if you donated, if you were proven to be an exact perfect match for my bone marrow and you saved my life by going through an excruciating procedure, I would quickly forget about it.
Oh, I would also never do that.
No. You understand. I would hire people to hold you down and we would extract the bone marrow using simple gardening tools.
I would then...
There's nothing you can do about
drink
it.
A lot of Drano that would then osmosize into my
Drano,
bone marrow.
Drano, as bad as it is for your body, really does enhance bone marrow production.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, so, you've got me there, you evil genius.
I say petting a cat. All right. Well, if you want to see a bond site, write in.
Right in.
And Gourley will tell you if he's been there or not.
Psych.
Psych!
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Conan O'Brien, Sonam Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Nick Liao, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.